Hello there, lovers of the future. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I am Paul McInnes, and in this week's show, we're dusting off our crystal balls. Yes, over the next half hour, we're going to be looking ahead to 2009, the year that's already begun, but yet we know so little about. Not for much longer, though. We're going to be demanding answers to the big questions about the next 12 months. Namely, which bands will we like? Which gigs will we attend? Which stupidly tight pair of trousers will we wear? All these topics and more will be tackled in the company of an A-list panel comprised of The Guardian's pop critic, Alexis Petridis, editor of Guardian/Music, Tim Jones, and our very own Rosie Swash. By the time you get to the end of this show, you're going to know so much about the next year, you might as well skip to 2010. And that is pop fact. So why don't we begin? This girl from London never fails. She never seemed too fair. Success would always move a day. But there was some who saw beneath this vision of perfection. And they were loved and loved in equal measure. Will she ever? That is the sound of the Invisible. And while you may not have heard of them before, or indeed seen them...
I thank you.
Rosie Swash is of the mind that you'll be hearing a lot more. Rosie.
Yes.
Bring the microphone to your throat and pronounce.
I was going to say, that wasn't me going, yay, that was Alexis.
Yeah, I know.
Just in case you
we know that.
I was about the joke. Not the
arrival of the Invisible.
Not the arrival. I mean, you know, obviously I'm delighted about that as well. I can barely sleep. But
So tell us who they are and why we've got to look forward to
them. The Invisible are three men from London who I think sound like Hot Chip meets TV on the Radio. But someone has described them as like Fugazi borrowed John Spencer's backline and got Terry Callier on board for a tribute to Band of Gypsies. Now, from what you just heard there...
Worst record ever heard in
my life. That sounds pretty awful. I can't hear any Fugazi in anything they do, even though I do like Fugazi. But it's Dave Okumu, who is the singer, who previously sang in Matthew Herbert's band. Matthew Herbert produced their forthcoming eponymous debut. Tom Herbert, who I assume is related to Matthew, was in Polar Bear. And the drummer, Leo, was the live drummer for Hot Chip, which might be why they sound a little bit like them. I just think they sound absolutely brilliant. And I guess, you know, TV on the Radio, personally, I thought that was the best album of the year, that I can't stop listening to it. And the elements of that I like, I can hear in this. And I look forward to hearing their debut.
And they're British too.
And they're British too. Yeah, which is really important. I only want to listen to British bands.
That's
ever.
Right. You've got a responsibility to put more money into our economy this year. And if it happens, it has to be through art rock 12 inches, then so be it. We might come back to that type of music in a wee while, but I'm going to bring in Alexis Petridis right now. Hello, Alexis.
Hello.
Who are you looking forward to hearing in the new year?
I'm kind of hoping, I've kind of got my fingers crossed, there's going to be a bit of a sea change in sort of music. In 2009, because I really sort of feel that the kind of indie guitar thing, it's really end of days stuff now. I don't know if you've heard the hotly tipped band Twisted Wheel. Absolute bunch of jokers. You know, I mean, it's really, really terrible. It's sort of like music for thick people. And, you know, you sort of listen to it and you just think, oh, God, you know, I can't. So what I'm kind of hoping is one of sort of two things is going to happen. I think there's also a sense that this may be taking place already, that people might be moving away from landfill indie, or whatever you want to call it, just on the grounds that all those big landfill indie albums at the end of last year, you know, bombed. Mm-hmm. The Keane album, the Razor Light album, the Kaiser Chiefs, that kind of thing. And you sort of think maybe people are getting a bit tired of it, and I think they might move in one of two directions. And one of them might be towards sort of dancier stuff. Because I think the more interesting new bands of last year, like Late for the Pier and Friendly Fires and people like that, clearly had a sort of, they had a, you know, a dance element to their sounds, people used to say, in the late 80s. And also because there seems to me a lot of really inventive kind of producers around, interesting dance producers around, who you could see how they could meld their style with, you know, rocking.
And if you were to nail that into one act, or maybe even two.
I don't know. I think Errol Olkin has his own label. The stuff he's been doing, particularly the stuff he's been doing under the nom de plume Beyond the Wizard's Sleeve, which is much more sort of psychedelic, that's really interesting. And the other direction I guess it could go in, that a lot, I suppose, more tipped to go in that way, is a sort of pop.
Okay, well, I might just pause you there, mm-hmm. because I think we'll probably come back to the subject of pop.
Okay.
toot de sweetie, so to speak. But I'm going to bring in Tim. Tim Boland.
Hello.
Hello there. Who are you looking forward to? Because you've been tipping a couple of acts for a wee while now. Any you care to share on the air?
You and Rosie will know exactly who I'm going to tip
for
next year. Magnificent LaRue, who I'm kind of obsessed with. It's all I'm listening to at the moment.
Explain the obsession.
Well, she wears very nice glasses and she has good hair. And also her music's fantastic. It sounds like Erasure, who I, you know, love.
So we're talking around the kind of the electro pop edge.
Well, I think a lot of indie bands, I think they've already run out in a way. I can't think of any exciting kind of four guys in a band with skinny jeans records coming out at all. I think that is over, and it's all about girls with synths at the moment.
And LaRue will be the prime example of that.
Well, I'm trying to convince Rosie Swash to buy a synth. But no.
Okay, well that's great. And I think on that note we might just move on there. I'm sorry, I can't get that image out of my head now. It just might work. I'm gonna add to that. I'm gonna say Mikachu. I keep on saying Mikachu. We've already had her on the pod. I love her. I don't think she's gonna get anywhere. I've nominated her for the BBC's Act of 2009.
I just heard her album, Jewelry. It's excellent.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that. I think she's so innovative and exactly the sort of thing we need in British pop. And I hope to see more of her in 2009. There you go. There's three predictions. Let's talk about some festivals. And when she lets me slip away. That was, of course, the sound of Blur, who last month announced they are to reform and play their first gig in 7 years, I believe. And they're going to be playing an already sold-out gig at Hyde Park. Tim, is this something, is this going to be the musical highlight of the year?
I really hope not. It'd be quite depressing if the musical highlight of the year was an old Britpop band reforming. I am quite sick of bands reforming. This will be good if you are a Blur fan. Which is a very boring thing to say, but I'm quite bored of all these reunions.
Do you not think it might be more interesting if Blur actually went into the studio and made another album, given that Damon Albarn has brought a vast and, you know, varied number of different influences into his music since the last one? I would be really, really intrigued to hear an album that the four of them put together.
Well, exactly. And normally the thing you dread hearing when a band reforms is the new material.
Yeah,
whereas this
yeah.
would actually be, you know, it'd probably be a lot better than some of the stuff they were working on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Are sometimes these gigs preludes to people getting back into the studio, or do you think it means they haven't been able to get an agreement about making new music?
Well, quite often bands end up making just a terrible, like destroying their legacy with a record. But I think the thing with Damon is he wanted to prove himself as an artist, and he made Blur records increasingly unlistenable as time went on. And then once he was free of that, he realised he could make great pop records as well. So I think he'd probably be wanting to bring a bit of that to Blur again. Mm-hmm. I would hope.
Rosie, are there any other, while we're on the subject of kind of bands and playing concerts, are there any other gigs you'd be looking forward to seeing? Because last year we had a lot of iconic first tours in a long time, Tom Waits, etc.
Well, of course, there is the Specials who are started. They haven't announced their... Oh, they have announced their tour dates, yeah. And they're doing the UK tour next year. No Jerry Dammers, but the rest of them will be there. And I guess as long as Terry Hall's there, then it won't be like a completely different band. And I'm very excited about that.
But we've been talking previously about the fact that actually it's not so much the individual tours as the kind of the group bills, the festivals that people look forward to.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I guess maybe people are now saying, are Blur going to play Glastonbury? Is that going to happen?
The Specials going to play Glastonbury?
Are the Specials? That would be fantastic.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Well, or Africa X Specials. You could just have
Africa Express with the Specials. That'd be fantastic.
Actually, didn't the Specials get on?
Some of them did. Yeah.
Well, Emily Evis told me that obviously they can't confirm any aspect of the lineup just yet, but that two of the three headliners they're hoping to secure very soon are absolute newcomers to Glastonbury.
It's LaRue.
It's LaRue, Little Boots, and Florence. There you go.
So what, they've never played any stage at Glastonbury before?
That's what she's saying.
So that makes you
but
think
that might
Americans.
All change. You know what Glastonbury's like.
Well, yeah, Led Zeppelin without Robert Plant, mm-hmm. which we're all looking
God.
Forward to seeing.
Can that work? No. Yeah. he's the answer there.
I don't think they'll really do it. Will they really do it without him?
The story, the tale that I heard was that they were sort of rehearsing without him in an attempt to kind of shame him yeah. into, you know, rejoining. And, you know, all credit to old Percy. He seems to just turn around and gone, you know, and not he's not interested. And good for him.
The man's tired. He's just been touring relentlessly.
And also, he has got a career of his own.
Yes,
you know.
It's doing very well. Yeah.
So, I mean, another question that might have an easy answer is are we giving Glastonbury a little bit too much hoopla here at the Garden? I mean, they had a really good return to form last year. Are we potentially putting a bit too much expectations on that festival to deliver the goods again?
In what way?
Well, in terms of act. I mean, well, you know, last year they pulled out of the bag after a mediocre year the year before. Do we think that next year they can stand out from the crowd, or with the presumably being a huge amount of competition again?
I mean, to me, the headliners, is, I know everyone says this, but the Park stage was great last year. And it's Emily's, you know, personal thing that she loves to curate that stage. And I think that'll probably be as exciting as your festivals or anywhere else.
If you weren't going to Glastonbury, where would you go, Alexis? In the world?
In the world?
I mean, because that's one of the things that
you could go to Coachella or something like that, couldn't you? I don't know. I have never really been to that many festivals that aren't Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. So all of them seem like a what's the one in the beach in Spain? That always looks quite pretty. Isn't
Benicassim.
It? Yeah, Benicassim. Yeah, mm-hmm. That always seems like quite a ridiculous lineup. That kind of thing. I don't really know. I'm not really. And to be really honestly, I'm not one of the world's great festival goers, other than going to Glastonbury. Really, yeah. So
you weren't that great when I saw you at Glastonbury.
that was a good year. That was me really enjoying myself at Glastonbury.
Has anybody been to Latitude Festival?
I have.
Because I wonder whether that might be kind of in danger of being a little bit oversubscribed and past its.
It's very very well behaved. It's quite boring. Is a complete lack of danger. Nothing unusual is going to happen.
Clearly, there are too many festivals. Clearly, you can't. You know, the Britain as a country cannot sustain this many. Everybody knows what the good festivals are. Everybody knows what the festivals that you know appeal to are quite sort of specifically targeted to a certain market. Include Latitude being one of them for that kind of like older dude who wants to listen to boring Americana all the time kind of market. You know, and I think. You might actually see less festivals starting up this year because, you know, there were ones that went down last year and stuff like that and didn't happen.
What I wonder about this is these boutique festivals. I went to the End of the Row Festival, which is very middle-aged men listening to
Americana.
That's the
one I meant, sorry, rather than Latitude. That's the middle-aged
Well, it did bring it straight to the front of my mind when you mentioned that. But I wonder whether those ones are actually going to be more secure. They're small scale. They're relying on kind of generally people who might have a bit more of a steady income, or whether it's these ones that people will say, oh, that's a luxury, we'll just retreat back to the family holiday and not do.
I think if you're aiming, I always say this, you know, that there's a lot of things that people mock about the sort of Tesco record buyer, but one thing they are is incredibly capricious. And if you're aiming your festival, if you're like a V or something like that, that's squarely aimed at the kind of three albums, you know, a year market, those guys, you know, that's going to be the first thing to go is going to a festival like that for that sort of audience. You know, they have no sort of particular brand loyalty. They have no loyalty towards particular bands, as is evidenced by the way groups rise and fall in that market really quickly. And I think they're going to have a tougher time of it trying to flog, you know, a festival like that as a kind of slightly corporatized day out for people who aren't, you know, diehard music fans, which is obviously incredibly different from something like the End of the Road Festival or Green Man or something like that, or even Bestival or whatever. Sorry, Karen.
No, I did know. I think that's very interesting, and in fact provides us with a reasonable enough segue to move on to our next section, where we're going to offer prognostications on the future of the music business. Hence a clip of Michael Jackson. That That was Jaco, who may or may not be putting out any output, but is certainly symbolic of the heady days of the music business of yore. And do we think, Rosie Swash, that things can get any worse for the industry this year?
Well, Pinnacle and Entertainment UK administration, it's gone. I think what's going to happen now is, as Radiohead nearly did by not making a CD and just putting it out on download, someone's got to just take that leap and say, we will not be putting any of our music out on CD anymore. And it could just very... Because it's not going to be profitable for bands to do that at some point very soon. Mm-hmm. And maybe this time next year, it just won't be happening. It will be a completely... The only market that will do it will be the supermarket.
But conversely, the only place that record companies are making any money at the minute are out of these deluxe, luxury, full edition box sets of albums. So something's got to give. Tim, you've moved to the web from being an illustrious man about town and to run the website. I mean, has that opened your eyes at all to kind of how this game is changing?
It's opened my eyes in that I have to pay attention to music news rather than lie in and watch, you know.
Jeremy Kerr.
Yeah. So I actually pay attention to the music industry a bit more now. I don't think music will ever suffer, because it's easier now to make music, record music, distribute music, market your music than ever. So that's okay. In terms of companies making money, it's obviously complete disaster time. I mean, I'd be panicking.
Particularly if the live market is going down, which it appears to be, because that was the sort of lifeboat, wasn't it? The 360-degree deal where you got a cut of the merchandise and all that kind of thing. And if the only people that can actually sell tickets are Take That and Oasis, which appears to be the case, then I don't really know what you're going to do then. You can't make any money off records, you can't make any money off merchandise, you can't make any money off touring. What are you going to do? You know, bake cookies? I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's like, it's not...
But this shouldn't be news to anyone, because anyone, all of us, we've all seen this on the horizon. So if you're at a record label, you must know this is coming.
Well, this is the interesting thing. I mean, this is exactly what Alexis says. You know, 6 months ago, I remember in South by Southwest speaking to a guy who'd just been kind of pointed high up in the shake up at EMI. And he was like, the last thing we want to be doing is selling records. We're just totally about the merchandise and the gigs. And it was like the confidence, the self-confidence the guy had when he was saying that was pure, unadulterated. Mm. And yet here we are, 6 months, 9 months down the road, and suddenly the figures are saying, oh, actually, no, people aren't going to these gigs.
You can never underestimate the music industry's capacity to not factor that kind of thing in. They didn't factor in what the internet might do to them. You know, they're sitting there going, oh, it'd be great, we do 300. They didn't factor in that people might, you know, be broke because of a recession and therefore might stop going to gigs and might stop spending however much, you know, 120 quid a ticket or however much it was to go and see Leonard Cohen. It might not do that. So, I mean, I don't think you can underestimate the music industry's capacity to be unprepared for the future, you know. I'm not really surprised that the guy, you know, was talking like that.
I wonder whether he's still in a job.
One thing I have noticed, which is quite a positive thing, actually, is when people started downloading music, it was always, you know, quite a cool thing to do, and you were really sticking one to the man. A lot of people now are really, really quite embarrassed to admit that they download music.
Oh, really?
I've noticed, and they apologise or say, oh, well, I just had to do it for this, or even, obviously, I would never download it, but... And you know, that's something I hadn't noticed before.
It's interesting if they actually managed to get a sort of stigma attached to doing it, you know, because that, as you say, yeah, that's a real change of heart. But if you think that you're actively screwing everything up for everybody by doing it, you know what I mean? If that idea is placed into your head, then I think that's probably quite a good thing in a way.
Yeah, it would be the first time it's stuck after 30 odd years of trying to get that message.
I definitely don't think it's going to save the music industry. I'd hate to be the person on this podcast saying next year it's all going to change.
I mean, can it survive just by reducing its horrible business term overheads? I mean, can it just pay artists less, spend less money on recording, not send people to LA to work with certain producers, and actually redefine its business model in that way?
There are plenty of labels, small labels, that succeed, you know, on a you know, not necessarily in the area of rock music, but there's plenty of like world music labels and plenty of kind of folk labels and things like that that do have a small, you know, and secure business model, and it's predicated on selling, I don't know, 10,000 copies or something like that. So, yeah, it can be done, but you're talking about an industry that's predicated on selling, whatever, half Millions. A million copies. Yeah. You know, it's quite a difficult, it's quite a big ask to get them to scale it down. And also, you know, rock stars, don't go to LA, you know, stay in Britain and... you know.
Yeah. What's the rock star in that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well then, a happy outlook. Sunshine sunshine and joy for the record industry in 2009 there. Right. Maybe try to cheer yourselves up a little bit now. Take it back to the music. Here's some Little Boots. That was Little Boots, tipped by many to be a breakout artist of 2009. Where we've discussed individual artists, but Alexis, earlier on, you were talking about the way, the general way you think some of the more popular music is going to go, and pop might be one of those directions.
I think it seems more interesting. You know, I think music is cyclical, isn't it? And as Tim was saying before, guitar rock has definitely started losing its luster. And even the most devoted NME reading kind of like has got to be sort of heaving a bit of a sigh at the sight of the things that are being dished up to them for 2009. And, you know, you sort of wonder if somebody like Little Boots can do what a pop artist has sort of got to do and actually... it is a really big ask for any artist to do this, but to cross those kind of boundaries and sell to indie kids and sell to kind of X Factor people and, you know what I mean? Maybe they can, you know?
Yeah.
She seems to be the one that people really think can do it. She's quite an intriguing character. She's got quite a lot about her and the songs are really catchy. So,
yeah. And they've got a little bit more of an edge about them than some of the other groups, like the Frank Music and things like that. But I wonder, because this, you might describe, or maybe I'm totally off the wall here, but you might describe this kind of phenomenon as being a little bit like pop justice pop.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a very fair point.
It's pop music, but it's intelligent, and it is as much for adults. Well, it is for adults, I would say, and not for kids. Mm. And I, you know, you read Pop Justice, and he's as enthusiastic about X Factor as he is about as he is about kind of intelligent electro pop. But I just wonder how big that audience is that will go for the both.
I think they're big enough to get into the music, but. I think the music, you know, can be that big, but I think to be a pop star on that level, you have to be quite an interesting personality as well. I'm not sure. Little Boots, she might be nice.
She is interesting. She, not only does she write everything herself, she is incredibly technical, and she's done what Lillianne did, built up online fans by posting herself on the Tenorian on YouTube to people, and people absolutely love it.
I think that's really, yeah, I do agree, and that's quite interesting to us, and it's can get a little cult following around it, but it's not snogging Britney, is it? Or something like that, or causing a massive riot, or do you know what I mean?
I personally find Madonna more boring than any other pop star on the planet, and would rather see Little Boots on a Tenorian than Britney and Madonna snogging
again. But it's not going to make national news, is what I'm saying.
Now, please don't fight. Tim, I wonder if on the other end of the scale, we've been talking about the invisible, we're talking about TV on the radio, and perhaps the places where people are playing guitars are perhaps, although in an unusual way, are in places that are a bit more experimental, art rock places. Do you think we'll be seeing more bands like this, more, there's that new Animal Collective album coming up?
I hope so. I mean, I only heard The Invisible today, and I thought it was brilliant. I wouldn't say they're necessarily that avant-garde, just an avant-garde band, are they? They're very pop. I thought straight away.
That's crucial, isn't it? Because there's been, for some time now, there's been a lot of bands like Foals and like Bloc Party to a certain degree who seem to think they deserve some kind of medal just for the fact they're doing something a bit different, you know what I mean, and don't really have the killer tunes to go with it. And what you need is the sort of experimental side of things and the willingness to take risks and all that kind of thing and be influenced by math rock or whatever you want, aligned to kind of brilliant pop songs. And then you're on to a total winner, I think.
Rosie, do you see any of the music heading in any other directions this year?
Well, what I've noticed this year is obviously Kanye West and Jay-Z and Lil Wayne, three of the biggest artists this year, who have done something, well, not so much Jay-Z, but Kanye West and Lil Wayne, something slightly different with rap that isn't just, you know, straight down the line gangster rap, which we've been seeing from other huge rappers like 50 Cent. And there are Kid Cudi, who is like sort of Kanye West meets Saul Williams, has put out a mixtape which everybody's raving about. Asher Roth, is a kind of collegiate Eminem. I mean, he clearly nicks his vocal style from Eminem, and I wouldn't say he's as interesting, but people seem to be liking him. And people like B.O.B. and Charles Hamilton, who is a little bit, is quite mainstream, but he is actually from the underground, and that's quite unusual. So John McDonnell, our scene reporter, has coined this blog rap.
Blog rap.
There you go.
So this is what otherwise the cool kids...
Otherwise known as blap.
Blap. Sounds too much like brap.
That brings us to the end of our tips on the genres. We're going to move over to trends now. We're going to talk about what might be we might be seeing more of, what people might be wearing, or what they might not be wearing in the year 2009. And here to illustrate it is a clip of Snow Patrol.
A fire, a fire. You can only take what you can carry. A pulse, your pulse. It's the only thing I can remember.
That is Snow Patrol, who we I don't think we've... Maybe they made it on the montage once before, but I'm not sure we've ever knowingly featured them on this pod.
I think Alexis said he wouldn't come
nothing,
into the pod.
Nothing's...
Stop talking over me. I'm glad to get
But the reason we're playing this whole little snippet is because Tim has a very pertinent observation to make on the subject of syncing.
Music syncing. I think
which
that,
is?
Well, it's where you basically get your music on... You know, the end of a TV show or a computer game. We saw a lot this year with, you know, the Guitar Hero and Rock Band stuff. I think computer games are where people are going to be looking to get their music placed, especially as the computer games are selling, you know, so much more than the music at the moment.
And people will be playing them more as they stay in more to save money during the credit crunch.
And I think
we'll
be seeing bands doing things like a lot of bands putting their albums out exclusively with these computer games.
I think the interesting thing about syncing rights is you can make vast sums of money doing it. I have a friend who is the bass player in a band who was sort of big in Britain in the late 90s, and career's sort of gone a bit down since then. And they're still sort of big-ish in America, and they tour a bit over there. And they got one song on Grey's Anatomy. One of the people who choose the syncing rights, a fan. And they made more money from having one song on Grey's Anatomy than doing two effectively sold-out tours of the US. Wow. It's big cash. And one story I heard, a rumour that I heard, is that Snow Patrol, which is why we played them, his manager has decided there's going to be no more syncing for Snow Patrol. And this is, you know, the sort of way it was told to me was that this was considered somehow beneath them or something like that. And, you know, not something that true artists do. Which would be interesting to see how a band like Snow Patrol will fare without having their music played over the bit at the end of Grey's Anatomy where a child dies and two lovers are reunited in the middle of a rainstorm, you know.
You've just spoilt that for me.
Oh, no.
I've been saving that all year.
Had it Sky Plus since January.
You thought the rainstorm was going to pass.
And also, I think the other thing that's going to break the banks of the sinking thing you're talking about is if this Beatles edition of Rock Band or Guitar Hero, whichever one it is, comes off. Because if they do it, that's the goal. You know, then you're going to get a Led Zeppelin edition. Then you're going to get... You know what I mean?
It's good that the bands who need the money are getting involved.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well,
you probably end up having some kind of Guitar Hero unsigned, where it's kind of almost about missing the notes rather than hitting them on time. Rosie, I mean, this is just a question. You consume a lot of bloggage going out there. Have you seen any things developing? What I've been noticing is a lot more video mashups. Like 5-6 years ago, we used to get the audio mashups. Shots of people put two unlikely tunes together and then play them out. There seems to be a plethora of people doing with videos, and particularly with Lil Jon. I've seen kind of like the fast food rappers and Lil Jon spliced together in the same video where Lil Jon keeps on sticking his head around the corner and going, yeah, just after they've mentioned some kind of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Are we going to be seeing more Web 2.0-ery in 2009, do you think?
Well, Miranda Sawyer made a good point in her last OMM comment, which was that column, which was that the expanse of the internet means that scenes and trends sort of don't exist. And anything that I've seen on blogs like No Pain in Pop, for example, which is an excellent blog to listen to new music, is people putting up music which are not actually songs. People are not making singles anymore. People just making noises for the sake of it, and you're waiting for the hook and you're waiting for the chorus, and it doesn't exist.
Oh, really?
Because people don't have to do that stuff anymore to get on these blogs, to get heard.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Rosie. Very interesting indeed, and generally, I think quite a stimulating round table discussion there. I think Radio 4's foreign correspondents get together better be looking over its shoulder because we're coming for them. Before we leave, let's have a whimsical. Let's just have something completely desultory. What would you like to see less of in 2009, Rosie Swash?
Well, I think we're going to see less of the retro female singers like Duffy and Adele, because although they both sold well, very well this year, you've got in replacement obviously people like LaRue and Little Boots, and that's what's more exciting. So it'd be great if we just saw less of the I listened to Dusty Springfield once.
And we might also be seeing the return of Amy Winehouse, the mother of them all, anyway.
Yes, indeed. We'll see the return of all those 2006 pop stars like Arctic Monkeys, Lily Allen, Amy Winehouse. They're all coming back next year.
Super. What would you like to see less of, Tim, in 2009?
A bit less of the incestuous London hipster rich kid scene. I probably said that last year, and they never go away.
Yeah, and here comes Jack Pignatti. I mean, who are we talking about here?
Well, just kind of the whole Peaches Geldof crowd, I guess, which kind of is destroying music.
Peaches Geldof is destroying music. No more, Tim. You've made the most powerful statement anybody could. Alexis, what would you like to see less of in 2009?
I don't want to be negative.
No.
How
about famine?
But famine, yes, war and death.
Peaches Geldof first, though, please.
I can't think of anything I'd like to see. I think the things that I want to see less of, we're going to see less of anyway, which is, indie guitar rock, that kind of thing. I would like to see donk music break out of its northwestern enclave and take over the world, and the Blackout Crew become bigger than the Wu-Tang Clan.
We should point out that you read about them first, didn't you, on the Guardian Music blog?
You certainly did.
Put a donk on it right there. Well, thank you very much to the panel. It's a wonderful introduction to 2009. We're going to be back next week when we'll be 2 years old. It's also our 100th show. How do we manage that? I do not know. Goodbye. Happy New Year to all. Ta-ta.